Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino.
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you're having a wonderful Thursday. Dr. Katie Eastman is with me today also. Hi, Dr. Katie. How are you?
Good morning from the West. I'm fine. So excited to talk to Linda.
I know. Are we just about as excited as it gets? We've been talking all week. We get to talk to Linda Ellis.
I know. It's so good.
Yeah. You know, talk about real people who have turned celebrity. Linda, did you ever expect in your wildest imagination or dreams that a little poem you would write would do the things it's done and touch the lives it's touched?
I never expected it, and I'm absolutely thrilled with it, having this opportunity to share my words and touch people's hearts and lives. It's been quite a trip.
Yeah. We are, of course, talking about the poem, The Dash, and there are so many people that have, you know, just great accolades about this poem, presidents, actors. What's the most interesting, or who's somebody that you never thought you'd hear from that you heard from regarding your poem?
Probably Senator Bob Dole. I was visiting in Florida. I was visiting my mother, and a fan wrote me and said, turn on CNN, or it was C-SPAN. And I turned it on, and I watched this war hero almost broken down into tears while he recited my poem to it was a group to honor veterans. And I was absolutely stunned. You know, I thought to myself how he'd taken shrapnel and whatnot in war, and here he was being touched so much by my words. It really touched my heart a lot.
Now, does he have to ask your permission first before doing something like that, or was it like turn on C-SPAN or CNN, and you know, it was all of a sudden there? I mean, did you have any heads up that was going to happen to you, or was it?
I didn't have a heads up on that one. Fortunately, the woman came on and said, you know, that poem by Linda Ellis and whatnot, and then I contacted him afterwards, and he graciously wrote a letter of how the poem had affected his life, and I put it in my new book. So it was a win-win.
Definitely. Katie, how's the poem touched your life?
Well, I found that poem one day when I was looking on bereavement websites, and it just hit me so hard because, of course, I've worked with grieving families for years, and I thought, oh, this just resonates so much with the work I do and the message I try to say about when someone dies. It's not how long you live, but it's how you live. It's the dash.
Right.
And so it really resonated with me, and I was very excited, and I sent it everywhere.
No, go ahead.
It's the, I think it's the simplicity of the poem. You know, it's not, you say the word poem or poet, and people say, oh, you know, I don't like poems or poetry. But it's the simplicity of the poem, I think, that is responsible for its popularity. It sinks in quickly.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, I don't like deciphering poetry.
Exactly.
That doesn't resonate.
Yeah, I always say it's not the scratch your head, grab a dictionary kind of poetry where you have to decipher and say, what exactly does this mean? You know, I call it, uncomplicated poetry for a complicated world.
Oh, I love that. Do you have you always been? Are you? Would you classify yourself as a poet or a writer? Because now you're in this realm of having written this book with your dash, Make Every Moment Matter.
Right.
And so, are you still a poet, or are now you an author of a novel?
I would say poet turned writer speaker, you know. It all just evolved for me, and I'd written poems since I was a child, and it was just a passion. My grandmother wrote poems, my mother wrote poems, and in fact, my grandmother's maiden name, she was from Ireland, was Barden, and a bard is a lyric poet, so I always said it's in my genes. And I always wrote poems as a child. All the other kids would come to the door during poetry season, you know, in school, and ask me to write poems for them. And even as I started working, I would write poems, sometimes fun, silly poems, and sometimes serious poems. And this all evolved. I started, what really happened, I wrote the poem, and then I wrote a story about why the poem came to me or what happened to make me think of the subject of the poem, and then it turned into prose, and then I combined the two, which is now my favorite thing to do. I'll write a story and then a poem to match or to, you know, sync it up, and that's my favorite now. So I'm a poet, author, speaker.
Did you, when you were writing, okay, so you were in the corporate world, though.
Right.
Were you?
Yes.
So were you doing your day job and then writing poetry and thinking, okay, I really don't want to be working here. I really want to be writing poetry. As so many
exactly.
Of us do.
Yep. I was waiting for those promotions and putting my letters in and doing my, in Georgia, it's 8 to 5, not 9 to 5. Like, and I was spending my life in a gray cubicle, and, you know, I always thought people around me would think I had some kind of a problem because I would get up, I would use the restroom excuse just to leave the cubicle, and I couldn't sit there. I had to walk around and talk to people, and I had this creativity inside that I had to have an outlet for, and I started writing more and more, putting my thoughts on paper, and I started sending it into a local radio show, which then became syndicated, and they started calling me the poet laureate of the show, and it was just a creative outlet for me. And then I wrote The Dash, and once that was shared, everything turned around for me. And I had an interviewer ask me once, he said, it's very impressive where you've taken The Dash. And I said, no, it's more impressive where The Dash has taken me, because people contact me. I haven't reached out to people, you know, as much as opportunities have come to me, and that's been something for me to.
That's probably the single best advice someone's ever given me as a person. You know, when you're trying so hard to do something, and you just want it to succeed, and you just want to, you know, you don't want to work in that gray cubicle anymore or whatever. Fred Cuellar, who owns Diamond Cutters International, said to me, "You know what? If it's good, people will find you."
Right. Yeah, and in the book, in my first book, there's a quote that says, throw your heart over the fence and the rest will follow. And that's what happened to me. I threw my heart over the fence and then everything came to me.
Katie?
You know, there's another wonderful lesson in your life, Linda, that strikes me. Have you ever heard the saying that the passionate work you do starts when you're 10?
No, I like
that. Have you ever
that.
Heard that? A lot of people I've ever met in my life have said, if you want to understand what your true passion is, go back to being 10 years old and what did you love to do? And you were doing poetry at 10 years old, and you rediscovered it as an adult, and that became your passion. And I think there's a lesson there that a lot of us do that. We have our passion when we're young, then we like unlearn it so we can make a living, and then we end up going back to it at midlife.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. That's exemplified in my daughter. She, at 10, would go on these computer programs and create all these buildings and intricate building plans and design them, and now she's gone into art history and wants to restore old buildings, so she went back to what she used to do. That's so true.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I'm actually writing that down.
Yeah, we say that a lot on our show because, you know, it's so important to go, I always say, go back to what you just used to love to do as a kid, whether it's painting or drawing or being on a computer or writing a book or reading a book or whatever it is. That's probably your little thing that you just absolutely love, because as a kid, you're just pure.
It's so true. It reminds me, I had a friend visit, my best friend as a child, and she visited me here in Georgia about 20 years later probably, and we were sitting at the kitchen table, and she brought out of her wallet a folded up piece of paper and unfolded it, and I recognized it as a poem I'd written her as a child, and she saved it all those years. So that hit me so hard right then, saying, well, now I'm doing this for a living, what I used to love to do. So it's so true.
Yeah. Now, for those of us who never break out of the roses are red, violets are blue mode, how do you know whether, sorry, I bet you finished that poem in your head much more marvelously than I ever have in my life. However, how do you know? Did you know, like, I've got a gift for this? Do you just know because the words flow and they rhyme and they, you know, they do all the things they're supposed to do? I mean, because I think no matter how long I sat at a piece of paper, only roses or red, violets or blue would come out. How do you distinguish?
I genuinely feel my words and my thoughts. When I'm inspired by something, I have to sit right then. That's when the inspiration is. And it's not an effort, and I think that's the difference. If it's an effort for you, or if you don't thoroughly enjoy it and feel it, then that's not your thing, you know. I sit and I literally spill my thoughts out onto the computer, onto the keyboard. It helps that I type about 100 words a minute so I can keep up with my thoughts. But I've cried after 9/11, after the death of people in my family. I have literally purged my feelings onto paper. And I cry as I write it. I sob sometimes as I write the words. And it is a release for me, just as someone would go to a therapist or a best friend and just release their thoughts and sometimes their anger. And, you know, I go to the keyboard and I just, it's my friend.
Yeah. Now, you were talking a little bit about your mom.
Yes, I wanted to say happy birthday, Mom. It's her 78th birthday, and she's listening from New York. And I just wanted to throw that in, 78 today. Go, Mom.
I can't tell. We have a caller also, and I can't tell if they're just listening along. We have a bunch of them, but we have one who's been on hold for 13 minutes now. So I'm wondering.
That's probably my mom.
it could be. Would she like to say hi, maybe? I don't know. It's area code 404. Does that ring a bell?
Oh, that's somebody here. She's probably in the 718.
Okay. Hang on. Hi, would you like to ask Linda Ellis a question, or would you like to just listen along? I couldn't tell if you wanted to ask a question. You're live, area code 404. Nope, just listening along.
Silent mode.
That's
probably one of my shy
friends. Yeah, no, people do that. They just like to listen or whatever. So that's fine. We've got a lot of people in the chat room as well. So if you'd like to ask Linda a question, just give us a call at 714-868-0220 or just type your question into the chat room and we'll ask Linda live on air. So happy birthday, Mom. Isn't that 78 years old? Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, that's awesome.
What's your life? Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. It's a little bit delay here.
It's hard, on the radio and stuff. We can't see when each other are stopping. But what's your mom like?
She's wonderful. She's always had a wonderful sense of humor. But the most, I guess the greatest thing she instilled in me, she would always say, it's only material, Linda. It's only material. If I lost something, if something, you know, she said, if you lost everything in a fire, if you're healthy and you have your family, that's all you need. And that was instilled in me, and it's reflected in a lot of things that I write. You know, I can just remember her always saying, it's only material. It doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah. Now, with your book, how did you go from being, did you ever think that you would write classified maybe as like a little bit of a self-help book in that realm?
I didn't. No, and if you talk to some of my friends, they'd be amazed as well. but that's the thing that I say in my book. You know, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not going to, you know, I'm a miracle worker. What I do is I notice my own weaknesses, my own faults, and I think to myself, what would I do? What can I do to help myself out of this? And when I think of that, I think, well, maybe this would help someone else, you know. And So that's where I draw from my own weaknesses, my own happiness, my own sadness, whatever comes from my own life. I find solutions. I think, well, maybe this would help someone else. And apparently, what I love most is when people read my work and then they come back and say, I feel like you wrote that for me. And I get that theme so much. And that's what affects me most. And I always say it inspires me when I inspire others. So that's where I draw upon.
Yeah. What's the process for writing a book like this versus a poem? How long did this take you to write, for example, you know, those types of things?
The funny thing is I was, my friend Nancy and I were up in New York City meeting with the publisher, and they said, I think they gave me 90 days or something to write it, you know, and I was, they say, can you do this? And I was saying, sure, of course I can, you know. I forget how many thousands of words it was. And Nancy's kicking me under the table saying, 90 days, are you crazy? So I came home, and even though I'm a gadget freak and I love to do, you know, I have my iPhone, my iPad, my iMac, everything. Instead, I wrote things down on notepad, on, you know, 4x6 pieces of paper and note cards. And I filled an 8-foot wall with thoughts and ideas. I had to put it out where I could see it. And then I rearranged them like puzzle pieces, and I have a picture of the wall, and I called it my wall of inspiration. And my 17-year-old daughter walked in and said, Mom, that's a wall of procrastination. Just write the book.
That sounds like Katie.
So,
Katie, you do that kind of stuff, too. Katie's been like, okay, I'm locking myself up in a room, and I've got my sheets of paper out, and Katie will how many pieces of paper do you post in that room on those walls, Katie?
Yeah, well, I did that in a hotel one day. I wanted my vision clear, so I did. I love strategic planning, so I went through three of those big wall size poster thing packages that you can get that stick to the wall, and about two packets of 5x6 cards, and and stickies all over. And I used a hotel room for 3 days to do it, and it was really a phenomenal experience. Now my problem is, like you, I'm on gadgets. So I have my book on three different gadgets.
Yep.
And
it's harder that
it
way
is.
Because
it
they're
is.
Tucked away, and it's almost like out of sight, out of mind. I call it, I'm writing a story now called Back to the Broom, you know, getting simple again, because sometimes simplicity is the most effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me. I've got just notebooks. You know, like the high school notebooks, the one subject, different color notebooks. That's me.
Yeah.
Everything goes in the volumes of them. Yeah. I'm wondering, would you read The Dash for us, or would you read Live Your Dash for us? Which one? You'd pick one, and that would be neat. We'll just be silent. You tell us when you're ready.
Okay, I'll share The Dash. That'd be wonderful.
Oh, exciting. Okay.
I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on her tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of her birth and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that she spent alive on earth. And now only those who loved her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real and always try to understand the way other people feel and be less quick to anger and show appreciation more and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? And that's the dash.
What a moment, huh, Katie?
Oh, it always makes me cry. Yeah, the poem really just touches my heart in such a beautiful way. But yes, it does. It's just, that was very special, Linda. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've recently gotten to the point where I can read it without crying myself. It was read at my father's service, and I couldn't read it. They asked me to, but I said, no, I think I'll stay in the audience for that one.
I almost want you to read the other one now, too, but I think we've asked enough. Do you read that so beautifully?
Thank you.
Would there ever be anything about it that you would, do you ever go, you know what, I don't like that word, or did you make that just to absolute the way you wouldn't change a word? When you write something, do you ever go back and go, oh, I would fix that or change that or anything, or is that just exactly the way that you would write it again?
That's the strange thing, the strangest thing about the dash to me. I'm a perfectionist, and I'll change, you know, I'll do a blog post or a story, and I'll change it a week later if something will come to me. I'll say, wait a minute, I want to say it this way or that way. And even when I'm writing, I'll flip things around and change things thesaurus-wise. But the dash, I sat down and wrote, and it wasn't changed afterwards. And, you know, grammatically, there's probably some things that I might change today, but it's to me, a classic, apparently. And it was where I was at the time, and I just sat and wrote it, and it hasn't been changed.
Yeah, I wouldn't change a word either. I wondered that, though, because a lot of authors are so critical of themselves, and you don't seem to be.
No, I you know, I didn't go for a journalist degree or a writing degree, so sometimes I think to myself, you know, maybe this should be a bigger word or, and then I think, no, it's the simplicity. It's what that's how I feel it touches people's hearts better, my poetry, the uncomplicated poetry. Because I hear from, you know, the realm of people in the corporate world or people in school, it's just the way that my poetry, hopefully, touches people. I feel it's because of its simplicity.
Yeah. Katie, what's your favorite thing about her book? What's your favorite thing about Linda Ellis's book, Live Your Dash, Make Every Moment Matter?
Well, you know that the work I do with dying children and their families, the message that I've been trying to get out for my 25 years as an adult working in that field has been that peace that says it's not how long you live, it's how you live. And that's what the dash to me is all about. And if everyone would recognize that no one's promised tomorrow, we all have a dash, then they would focus more on today and making each moment today count and live today. And that's been a message I've been trying to get out for years. And when I read the dash, it was like, oh, she's saying it. And people are listening. And I think one thing that really I love about the poem is its simplicity and the simple voice. And coming from the academic world, I mean, I can attest, I've spent years trying to get rid of that academic voice.
Well, you hang around me, Katie.
Well, it's been wonderful because I've had a place where I can use my simple, my heart voice is what I call it. And it doesn't mean there isn't a place for the academic voice, but I'm much more comfortable with my heart voice. And so I love what you said, Linda, and I think that there are so many people out there who are like myself who are afraid to write because they weren't a writer.
And yes, they want that perfection. Yes.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And there are just so, if you're worried about the grammar, there's so many people out there who can help you. And you don't need to worry about it. Write from your heart and fix it later.
Exactly. That's what editors and proofreaders can do for you. Fix it later. So true. Because it is a hindrance when you're afraid that it won't be perfect and you'll be criticized.
So I'm randomly just thumbing through your book here, which I just love. And I turned to page 106, which is Stratitude.
Right.
I was wondering if you could explain to our listeners what Stratitude is.
Stratitude is what I've, again, tried to mix the simplicity so you can remember certain catchphrases and whatnot. And I call Stratitude is a strategy of gratitude. When you start being grateful for the blessings in your life, I always refer to the story of a speeding train. And when you're on a speeding train, everything is blurry next to you and you can't concentrate or focus on anything. And that's how we get in our lives. We get moving so fast that we forget to focus on the blessings that are all around us. So when you adopt a strategy of gratitude and enforce your Stratitude, then you can more easily focus on what you have and not what you're desiring all the time.
And then what about your 9-12 philosophy?
The 9-12, after 9-11, when it ties in with the Stratitude, you know, with the immense sorrow and loss, we all came together and there were, you know, people changed their attitudes, albeit temporarily, possibly, sometimes, but a lot of people, you know, changed their attitudes towards one another. On 9-12 it began, you know, and it took that tragedy to change some people's hearts, unfortunately.
Yeah. I've got one more. Well, I've got a lot more here because I just absolutely love this book. I can go through.
Thank you.
You can just read this book online. I just love this book.
Thank you so much. I love it too.
Yeah, if you don't have a copy of Linda's book, I think we're going to do more giveaways on besteveryou.com. We gave away 4 or 5 copies last month, but it's called Live Your Dash, and it's Make Every Moment Matter. And you can get this wherever books are sold, or you can, you know, download it on Kindle or iBooks, or, you know, wherever you can buy a book, you can get this book. But through it are all of these poems. Let me see how long this book is. Almost 300 pages long, 276 pages or so. But through it there's poems throughout. Are all of these poems ones that you have also written, and are any of them written by you as a child?
Nope, these were all gathered and written over the years, waiting for a place like this to display themselves. And some of them are new, and some of them were written for the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your book, one of the neatest things that I love about this is your sense of humor.
And, thank you.
Yeah. We have a funny sense of humor in email. I sent a copy of my own book to Linda just to say, hey, can you read this? Because my husband won't read it. And he said, tell everybody what you said back. That was the funniest thing.
I said reading it aloud was the only way my husband will read it.
Yeah, well, because I took your book, through a whole bunch of things. I took your book, Live Your Dash, down with us this past weekend to New Hampshire, and I was reading my husband and my children some of the poetry and parts and bits and pieces of your book. And, you know, that's probably the only way he would read a book. And I joked to you as I sent you my book saying, you know, he's never going to read this book, Linda. Can you just read this for me? and it's by, you know, Katie and I are writing this book. And so it's a big deal to us to have you give our book a glance. I just wanted to let you know that. But we really appreciate that a lot because neither of our husbands is reading it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We have to read aloud to our husbands.
They have to listen to us on the radio.
Yeah. But in your life and in your book, how important is it to you to convey to yourself and to others to have a sense of humor? You call it your seventh sense.
Absolutely. It's the only thing that's gotten me through the years. You know, I have a crazy family and crazy friends, and, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself, then life isn't, to me, what it could be. It's all about laughter, and, you know, when you smile, it changes everything. Sometimes I'll tweet, smile right now, just smile, wherever you are, because it can literally, if you force a smile and you hold it, it can literally change how you're feeling inside. I call it the least expensive way to improve your looks.
That's cute. Do you, it's funny. In your book, do you have another poem that is one of your favorites? Or maybe not in your book. Do you have something that's out there that, you know, none of us know about that you just absolutely love?
Actually, I do. I have one written that I'm hoping to make the subject of a new book, and it's called This Point Forward. May I share that?
Oh, I would love to hear that. Another moment.
Do you spend precious minutes focused on things you cannot change, reliving events from yesterday that you cannot rearrange? Do your past loves and losses in various renditions run through your mind repeatedly like haunting apparitions? Have you ever stopped to calculate the amount of time you waste, regretting choices and occurrences that can never be erased? If you allow these days that pass to heal each wound and scar, and stop bygones from controlling the person who you are, at peace will be your heart and soul. Your senses will awaken when you cease the constant yearning for all the roads you haven't taken. The past is gone. It's over. Do not replay. Do not rehearse. For you will never move forward if you are driving in reverse. Banish hurtful happenings, though they once cut like a knife. Make this day, today, the first day of the remainder of your life. Don't second guess the years gone by. Only focus on the rest and believe without uncertainty that they will be your best. Do not squander the present with regret and with sorrow. Be grateful for your gift of today and pray for another one tomorrow. Of the years that you shall live, January to December, make each surpass the last as the year of all years to remember. Live life from this point forward in your heart and in your mind. Bring all that's worth remembering and leave all that's not behind. That's one of my new favorites.
I love that. How do you do that?
I love that, too. I do, too. I think that's wonderful.
Oh, what a beautiful. Now, are we allowed to use your poems? Can we? Do you have to get permission? Mm-hmm. As long as you credit and say, this is from Linda Ellis, blah, blah, blah. Can you repost your poetry? Is that okay to do, like, in social media and stuff, or do you have to get your permission
first? What I do is post everything online on my site, which includes all the right copyright information, and then people can link to it, you know, instead. This controls the copyright and the licensing and the, you know, and I explain to people that these are my products, and if you, for instance, if someone wanted to license something to reproduce in a book or whatnot, and then they see that it's everywhere on millions of sites, they're like, well, I'll just take it rather than, and there'd be no way for an author to make a living. You know, the only way that I can continue writing is by keeping an income flow so I can have the opportunity to write instead of going back to the 9-to-5. So when I think these, you know, I refer to these as my products as well. They're my heart, as you say, Katie, written with my heart voice, and they're my feelings, and they're also products. So I ask that people please link. I'm so happy to share my work, but I ask that they provide a link instead.
Do you ever write music?
I don't write music. It's one of my biggest regrets. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to take guitar lessons and whatnot, and I just didn't have it. It's very complicated. You know, you see people play guitar, and you think, wow, I'm going to do that. And then you start to do it, and you're like, this is a little more complicated than I thought. So there are others that are putting my work to music, and so I'll leave that to them. But I'm not very good at music.
Are you good at writing songs? Like the lyrics and so forth? Do you think go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lyric is a poem. So when the lyrics are put to music, I leave it to the songwriters to rearrange and change the words so they flow to the music they've written.
Katie, did you want to ask something?
Well, I actually was along the lines of music. I wanted to kind of shift direction back to something you said earlier, Linda, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You were talking about in honor of your mom being 78, and I'm, as a mom who of a daughter who's about to turn 10, who announced this morning she wants to take 4 dance lessons, join the band, play guitar, and she's just all about music and dance. And what I was wondering is, how did your mom support your passion when you were a kid?
Well, she would read I still have the poem book. She would read poems to me repeatedly. I'm talking 100 times, you know, not at one sitting, but I wouldn't let her stand up. I'd say, no, one more. And she would read this poetry to me. And I do still have the book with the worn pages, and there were a few, you know, fun poems, and it was an international poetry book. So I still remember curling up on the couch and having her read these poems to me over and over. She must have been bored out of her skull, but she would, as many times as I'd ask, she'd read it one more time for me. So I think maybe she sensed my passion at that point. And always when I'd have an idea or a poem or something to write, she called herself my editor when she was staying with me, and I'd run up when I'd say, read this, and she'd read it over for me. And, you know, I could tell by her reaction whether it was a hit.
Aww.
Was she honest with you sometimes if it wasn't all that great? Or how did she handle when things weren't,
I guess she lied, because
okay, good.
Everything I gave her, she said, either they were all great or she lied. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Funny. We have another caller. I'm gonna just open up the phone line to area code 540. And if you're listening, that's if you just want to listen, just let me know that you're just listening. Otherwise, if you want to ask a question, I'm about to make your microphone live. Hi, area code 540. Did you want to ask a question to Linda? Or are you just listening?
I just want to make a comment.
Sure.
Linda and I are good friends. This is Mark Grubb, Linda.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good. He's a Facebook fan. I've never heard his voice before. That's wonderful.
Aww.
Well, now you have a voice. Anyway,
yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment about Linda's book, Live Your Dash. It's one of the most awesome things I've ever seen. And over the past year or so, Linda and I have been there again. Where she named give a new meaning to a fan and a friend, and it's called Fran.
Yeah, my friends.
So I've become one of her number one friends. So anyway, I wanted to kind of ask Linda a question. At the same time, if it's agreeable, I'd like to read what the comments I made about Live Your Dash. I was one of her first people who made a comment on Amazon about her book, and I would just,
right.
I think it transcends maybe the thoughts and feelings of other people. If I could just read that, would that be okay?
Please. Yeah, please share it with us. We'd love to hear it. Thank you.
Okay, within these pages, I found a familiar spirit and a great comfort as I relaxed in the shadow of Linda Ellis's thoughts and words. I found sanctuary in this wonderful book from the clamor of a noisy world while I became reacquainted with myself. As I read each verse and line, you can feel the labor of love as Linda gives birth to emotions that could not speak and to music that had no words. I have taken delight in her children as they were born in this book one by one and by this awesome author of imagery and inspiration. And that's what I mean every word of it.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. But my question to Linda was, I know that her father and his passing had a profound effect on her life. And as being a writer myself, I know that you have to endure a lot of pain and suffering to become what you are and to share these thoughts with other people. But I'd just like for Linda, if you don't mind, to just share with us what your father was and how profound of an effect he had on you before and after his passing.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, my father was my best friend. He used to tell everybody that he raised me from a pup. When I was smaller, I had three older brothers, and 6 years later I came along, and we were side by side always. And he got cancer and about 7-8 years ago now, and my brother and I saw him through that, and his courage, even his humor, you know, he helped me cope with it. I always said he was my rock, and he needed me at the time. So I said, where do you go when your rock needs a rock? You know, I had to turn to my brothers at the time, and seeing him through that, seeing his courage, changed my views on life, death, everything. He was so strong and so courageous. He went and picked out his own, when he realized he was sick, he picked out his own gravesite and paid for everything and arranged everything so I and my brothers wouldn't have to. And he came home one day and he said, well, I finally got my waterfront property. And I just dismissed the comment. I didn't even realize what he was talking about. And then when I stood listening to the preacher at his gravesite, and I turned and the wind was blowing, and I turned and looked, and I saw a small lake adjoining the place where he was going to be buried, and I thought, yeah, Pop, you finally got your waterfront property. So he was just amazing and a very, very important part of my life, my strength, and my friend. Thank you, Mark, if you're there, for asking about that.
You're welcome.
And Mark mentioned my children, and that's one of the terms that I use about my poetry and the stories in this book. It's almost like, you give birth to your children and you put them out in the world and you hope that people love them and appreciate them the way that and the efforts that you've put into raising them. And that's how I feel about my words when I put them out there. I hope people love them as much as I do when I created them. So they're my children.
Oh, you just make me cry. You know, what I love about you is you are so genuine.
Thank you. I had an interviewer once say say that I was transparent, and I was totally quiet online because I thought, is that a compliment or a cut down? And then afterwards I started thinking, well, that was one of the most greatest compliments I've ever gotten, and I'm going to try to remain transparent, you know. That's the only way to be. If you're not true to yourself, then people know, you know. They read it in your words, and they hear you on the radio, and they know that you're not speaking, as Kay says, your heart voice.
Yeah. How do you come to a point where you can, is there a way to teach people a heart voice? Is there a way to teach people that it's okay to say, to talk about their parents and their fathers and their lives more openly?
I try to tell everyone, I use the term that we're all connected, you know. When you start thinking about how much more we have in common than you know, we have opposite, then you start realizing, hey, you know, we're all here temporarily, you know, nobody's guaranteed a tomorrow. And we're all connected, so it's okay to share, you know. And it took me a while. I was afraid of criticism. I was afraid of, you know. But then when I started hearing from people saying, wow, I feel like you wrote that for me, and I share the same feelings, and, you know, we really are connected, and it's okay to share, you know. It's okay to share your heart.
Do you think it would be, and Mark, I still have your microphone live, so if you want to chime in again, just feel free to ask another question or whatever, or if you want me to mute your microphone, just let me know.
Okay.
But what I was going to ask you, Linda, is do you think it would be a different world if we didn't learn these lessons at 30, 40, 50, but rather we learned them very, very early on? In other words,
absolutely, yeah.
You know what I'm
trying
to say.
There's a poem in my book called, I'm sorry.
No, you know, you without me finishing, you knew what I was trying to get at anyway, so just go for it.
Okay. There's a poem in my book called Dear Me, and it's lessons, if you had an opportunity to write yourself at a younger age what you've learned and live your life again knowing everything. But, you know, it's all part of the process. You know, it's a plan, and it's too bad that we don't start the stratitude earlier. But, you know, as they say, youth is wasted on the young, and the sooner that epiphany comes to you, and I think that's where the dash comes into play. As soon as, you know, I start the book, which is kind of odd, with the sentence, "We're all going to die." Great way to start an inspirational book, right? But until you realize that, truly realize that life is so brief, and the things that matter, once you start realizing in your heart the things that really matter, is when you really begin to live life and inhabit. I call it inhabiting the moments, you know, be there for your moments and not just let life pass by. And the support that I get from, you know, people talk about social media, and Mark mentioned my friends. Mark is one of the people, Mark Grubb, and, you know, I have people, Gail Blanton, and special people that I've met online, and the Sittons, who lost their six-year-old daughter and wrote a book, wrote a story for my book. I've met people online through my words, and we've connected through hearts and minds, and actually never shook hands, but we know we're connected, and we know we share the same values. So it's funny how you can meet people through your words and get connected that way.
If you
and I'm rambling, right?
No, I love listening to you. I just see you doing so much public speaking as well. I would imagine people would just have and would just love to continue having you at their events speaking, and you're just so inspirational to listen to.
Thank you.
It's just fun. You almost sing your words. I don't know if you know that or not, but you do. It's very neat to listen to you. You have a really cool voice. But what I was going to ask you was, if you weren't doing what you were doing right now, which is writing and poetry and so forth, is there anything else that you've ever thought, you know, I'd be a really good doctor or something, you know, something like that? Is there something else that you've thought about doing?
Yes, a teacher. I love, just like when you say my words touch your heart, and you know, some of them, many people have written me that they've changed their lives because of it. That's how, you know, I picture myself as a kindergarten teacher or a first grade teacher, seeing what the knowledge that I'm sharing affecting a life, and, you know, seeing them, the children have those aha moments where they get something, you know, I get it, and being responsible for that. So, I've always had that in the back of my mind, yes.
Katie, wouldn't you make an awesome teacher? She would have been the best teacher ever. I wish I would have had you in kindergarten.
I'm sitting here thinking,
you know,
when
age, it would have been really fun to have you as my kindergarten teacher.
Oh, no, but, you know, I keep thinking, Linda, when is your children's book coming out?
Yeah.
I have a children's book called Cute Newt, and it's actually cutenewt.com. Oh, gosh, I should know this. And it's all about a salamander who can't stop sneezing, and it's kind of fun.
Oh,
it's all
adorable.
Written in rhyme, and I'm trying to get that published as well. It's in the queue, as they say.
I would love to have a book to give my daughter that written by you about the dash for children.
You know, I've recently, the dash fits into so many things. I wrote a hero's dash for our military. I wrote a mother's dash, and I've written a survivor's dash for cancer survivors, breast cancer survivors. And the dash fits in well with children as well. You know, there's so many different ways it can go.
Yeah. Don't you just love that? The infinite possibilities.
It does, yes.
You must just have a house full of walls with ideas all pinned up all around.
I do. I have a friend, my friend Julie says that she just wants to get in my brain and, like, get in a boat and ride around and see what's going on, because there's always, always thoughts going on. And when I was writing the book, she said, it looks like I'm going to need a motorboat now to, you know, go around and see what's going on in there, because my friends will tell people, they'll say, look out, because you'll end up in her next book, you know, if you give her an inspiration.
I don't want to be an end-of-the-book person, but at the end of the book, there's a poem called My Life Song.
Oh, I love that.
It's funny, because I read this also to my husband and children on the way to New Hampshire, and they love this one as well. But is this one isn't written by you, or it is? It's not.
It is written by me, and I made the error of putting one of my favorite quotes underneath it, so people thought that gentleman had written the poem as well.
Okay.
But yeah, that was written by me.
Okay. Yeah, that's a beautiful poem. Would you ever read that? Would you read that to us, or is it too long?
I'd love to. In fact, the odd thing is I just flipped my book open, and it popped open to that page. So
yeah, I love
that's a coincidence.
Yeah, we didn't know. We had a discussion, though, whether it was you or him writing it. I'm like, no, I don't think she'd have a book full of poems that she'd written and then include one from somebody else at the end.
Right. Okay, this one's titled My Life Song. I ask of you, don't cry for me, for I have lived my years. Save the salt and save the water for those who need your tears. Instead, celebrate my journey. Lose your sorrow and concern. We only get one ride in life, and I simply took my turn. Of myself, I have been proud. Of myself, I've been ashamed. But through it all, no matter what, I'm the only one I've blamed. Life's answers weren't always clear until I looked through aging eyes at the should-have-beens, the could-have-beens, the what-ifs, and the whys. I've had my joys, I've had my sorrows. No need for totals or for tallies. Of the ups and downs in my life, I've had more peaks than valleys. I've had good friends and I've had bad, and I've been both, it's true. For I have lived and loved enough to have lied and been lied to. I have fretted, I have stressed, and I have filled my mind with doubt about the troubles and the problems that alone work themselves out. There are times I would have risen high if not for my fear of the fall, but I've learned that feeling pain is better than feeling nothing there at all. Sometimes I spent without regard to the money I was making, but I always strived in life and love to give more than I was taking. I learned late to cherish moments spent with the many paths I've crossed, from shedding large, regretful tears over opportunities I'd lost. I fell in like and I fell in love. I gambled and I married. I was blessed with the health and strength it took to raise the children I had carried. Many times I've erred and blundered. I've made more than my share of mistakes. I've worried enough to pay in full the toll that worry takes. I've always tried to well avoid confrontation, flack, and friction, but I don't remember hesitating once to stand up for my conviction. I've been liked and I've been loathed. I've been pushed and I've been shoved, but I say with honesty and gratitude that I've been truly loved. At times I've laughed, at times I've cried, at times I've hoped and prayed, at times I've regretted the times I worked, those times I should have played. Sure, there are things I didn't do and no doubt things I didn't say, but if I had one more ticket to ride, I would ride again today.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty transparent as I
read. I can hear you laughing in parts. So cute. Do you is that what you think about your life? Did you write that as
yes.
You know, yeah. Just exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, at some point in the far, far future, at your funeral, let's say,
mm-hmm.
what would people be reading?
You know, I have something in there as well saying, you know, I don't want my eulogy to be like my resume. You know, the people there all know me well, so tell it like it is. You know, there's a poem in there like that. You know, I want people to say that I was giving most of all. I want them to remember me as a generous person as a loving person and as a happy person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just smile as as I text. It's, you know, if it's not joyful, then what is it?
Yeah. I want a big party. I just want everybody
to have a big party. Have a big party. My friend Nancy and I call it live your dash, and sometimes we'll just plan a crazy night, you know, and we have live your dash wristbands, and we'll wear our wristbands, and everyone has to wear their wristband, and we have a live your dash night or live your dash day. And I got an email from, I think it was Tasmania, it's in the book, and there's a group of elderly women who have formed a group, a dash group, and one person's in charge. I think they go every month or so, and one person's in charge of planning the outing, and no one's told where they're going. They're only told what to wear.
What part of forgiveness, how does that play a role in your life?
You know, I find it harder to forgive myself than to forgive others. I can forgive others more easily than I can forgive myself. So one thing that I work on with forgiveness is learning to forgive myself and move on. And that goes with this point forward, you know.
Yeah.
You have to learn to forgive yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So to everyone in the chat room, we may let the show run maybe 10 seconds longer, 15 seconds, or maybe a minute longer, but it will cut off live to you listening. So if you do want to listen to the end of the show, it will keep recording and you can listen to us live on replay. So I want to make sure I have enough time here to say goodbye to Linda and everything and give Katie some closing thoughts. Katie, did you want to chime in?
Oh, I just love everything you're doing, Linda. Thank you.
You've
actually affirmed my heart voice big time, and I just appreciate your work so much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you all for having me on.
What a gift to have you with us for the full hour. What a gift to have you read your poetry, and you know, you're considered one of the best poets of our time. So
this
is a moment for all of us, and we're all sharing it. The chat room's full. I've only been able to take a few calls of all the many, many people on hold, so I apologize for that. But if you want to get in touch with Linda, you can visit the website at lindaellis.net. And I'm just going to go ahead and close this out and say thank you to Linda. Thank you so much.
Very much. Live your dash.
Live your dash, everyone. Take care.
Live your dash.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.